Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. February marked the one-year anniversary of the stimulus plan that was enacted to rescue a flagging U.S. economy. But most of us associate the $787 billion package with spring and summer 2009, when the shovel-ready projects began receiving the funds. And last week, the president was in town to tout the impact in Ohio. So we wanted to talk about that today. And joining us today to discuss the pros and cons of Barack Obama's stimulus program is Doug Caruso. He's a reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ann.
Joining us later, we'll have a representative from the Strickland administration's Ohio Department of Transportation and also a Republican strategist who is a critic of the plan. And farther down the road, we'll meet a couple folks who are beneficiaries of a couple organizations that are beneficiaries of the stimulus program and see how it works for them. Last week, President Barack Obama told a crowd gathered at Parsons and Livingston Avenues that the stimulus bill is working in Ohio.
Nearly 2,400 small businesses have gotten loans to keep their doors open and their workers on payroll. 4.5 million families have gotten tax cuts to help pay their bills and put food on the table. Some 450 transportation projects are underway or have been completed, and more than 100,000 Ohioans are at work today as a result of these steps.
Doug Caruso, true or false? Is the stimulus program in Ohio all it's cracked up to be?
I'm not sure it's as good as he's saying, and it always depends on who you ask. Critics will point to the fact that Ohio's lost 128,000 jobs since this was passed. The supporters will say it would have been a lot more. I think Obama just said there were 100,000 more people working in Ohio because of this. That may be true on a person basis. It might not be so true if you look at it as a full-time job. The recipients are required to count their jobs as a full-time job. So they have to take the number of jobs that are the number of hours that the people work that are supported by the stimulus and divide them by 540 hours, which is the number of hours in a full-time job for 3 months. Every quarter they have to do this. And when they do that, they come out with a number more around 23,000 jobs in Ohio. The last quarter, that's what that report came out to be. Now, if you looked at that in absolute terms, like the number of people working, if you have four people working, a half-time job, that's like gets counted two one way or four another way. That's four people with a job, but it's two full-time jobs. So it all depends on how you count it, who's counting it, what their goal is in telling you that number.
You know, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act had two missions. When you go to the website, it says it's to provide unprecedented transparency about how the recovery funds are being used and also to increase accountability to guard against fraud, waste, and abuse. Is the act achieving those missions?
In some ways it is. Like I said, the reporting is pretty intensive. I mean, everybody, I think you'll have people on later on who are involved in this will tell you they have to make a report every month about who's working, how many hours they worked, how much money they paid them. There's quite a bit of reporting going on. Every 3 months, the government puts out these enormous data files with, thousands of projects, all the recipient reported data. But then again, it's not perfect. There are things that you can't see. I've written a little bit about the home weatherization program. The government, is giving money through the stimulus to weatherize people's homes, give them insulation, add furnaces, things like that. This is a program that's for people who make up to double the federal poverty level. We tried to see exactly who was getting that and where it was going. Fairly easy for a contractor or an agency that's doing these projects to say they're doing something that they don't do and take the money. And there's really not a way to check because we're not allowed to see the addresses or the names of the people who receive it. The rationale behind that is that it's a means-tested program. So you would be revealing that somebody makes between $0 and $40,000 roughly a year if you were to give out their name. I've argued with the agencies over that. They still haven't released the information. But, so it's not always completely transparent.
Depends on your definition?
Depends on your definition. It depends on the program. There's some programs that are extremely transparent. The roads programs are very transparent. You can see every contractor, subcontractor, exactly how much they're being paid, exactly what they're doing.
But all that stuff comes through the state, and isn't that as much a function of the fact that it's a state – a lot of it's state-funded?
It's not state-funded. Federally funded construction going on that is stimulus construction in Ohio, Nelsonville Bypass,
okay.
This Parsons Avenue project that Obama was here for. And those projects generally they're pretty – you can go get the records. You can see exactly who's being paid what on those projects. So, in some cases, yeah, they're being very transparent. In some cases – not so transparent.
My guest is Doug Caruso. He's a Columbus Dispatch reporter. He covers how the stimulus program has unfolded in Central Ohio. Doug, a year ago last spring when the governor put out that sign-up list online and people mm-hmm. were proposing tons of different kinds of ideas.
Right.
Do you remember that? And what are some of them that are more memorable?
I think there was a giant statue of Obama on that list. There were a bunch. I mean, it was just, hey, Ohio, what do you want? And people listed all kinds of things. And it was kind of silly, actually.
Did that ever come to anything? Did that lead to?
There were there may be projects that were listed because some cities and counties seriously put down projects that they wanted to get done. And some of those projects, once they got through another venue, that probably wasn't the venue that was going to get your project done. If you went through your local transportation agency, like the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission held meetings and put together a list of projects for this region, and a lot of those projects are now funded. But if you were just throwing your project on there hoping it was going to stick, good luck. I think nobody really knew what to expect at that point. And it was a way to kind of get it out there and get people involved in it. But I don't think that was a serious way to plan projects. And in fact, ODOT ended up going through an entire other series of a whole other process to put together its list of projects. Everybody else, that list wasn't a serious list.
I think that there were sidewalks being put in Upper Arlington. So not all the money came from, and there were different kinds of projects like that. What was the main criteria when it came to transportation projects?
The main criteria at the beginning was shovel ready. It was that it was planned, it was ready to go, that they could put the money in and get it started. Getting to that was a little bit slow. I mean, in June of last year, so February, they passed the stimulus bill. They want to get this money out very quickly. In June, as construction should have been really ramping up last year, when you looked at what was actually being done on stimulus projects in Ohio, there were 13 jobs supported that month.
13.
By the end of the summer, it was getting more toward 500-600 jobs. And this summer, supposedly, it's going to be much more. All these projects. So there was still a pretty hefty ramp up on all these projects, even though with that shovel ready.
Again, shovel ready is one thing. That means that the plans have been made, the specs have been drawn. Maybe they have already had it out for the request for proposal, the RFP, that kind of a thing,
right.
And they just weren't able to fund it. Otherwise, and
right, and you need environmental tests have to be done. All kinds of there are a lot of steps to get one of these projects going, and if the more of those steps that were completed by the time you made your application, the better chance you were going to get it.
Public works projects were a big part of the program, of course, but private businesses had a stake in it too. We talked about that request for proposals that the governor put up. And the president said last week that in Ohio, 2,400 small businesses have gotten loans to keep their doors open. How's that played out in Central Ohio?
I don't know. That's a program I haven't taken a close look at. I can remember from a few months ago, there were national stories saying that the Small Business Administration program actually was running pretty slow. They were having a hard time getting the loans out the door. So it's probably it's something I should probably take a look at. But I don't really have a way to evaluate that statement. I don't know if 2,400 is low or high compared to the goal that they should have had for the number of businesses around here. I mean, it's easy to put out a number. It's hard to put that in context. And from actually what I'd been hearing, like I said, this would have been last winter probably, the SBA program nationally wasn't getting a lot of loans out the door. It was just there was a reluctance to put out loans to put loans out just because of the way the economy is.
Well, the administration of the whole program, is there a sense about how it's working in general? About as expected or?
It's going to depend on who you ask. You have the Obama administration. It's working great. You know, it's creating lots of jobs. It's helping everybody. If you ask the Republicans, they're going to say, look, we still have really high unemployment. The economy isn't out of danger yet. It's hard to evaluate. If you talk to some economists will say that it couldn't help. It almost had to have helped. You pour that much money into the economy, it's going to have some kind of an effect. One guy was talking, joked that, you know, somebody – they could – all the money could get stolen and the thieves would go out and buy cars and that would stimulate the economy. You know, I mean, it had to have some effect. But depending on where you're looking at it, we either have staved off much greater job losses or we are continuing to have job losses, and this isn't working.
We're going to have to take a short break. In the meantime, if you have a story about the stimulus program, if you know somebody or if you've ever received a loan from it or a grant or some other aid from it for your business, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. We will have Charissa Durst on. She is a owner of Hardlines Design Company. She'll be coming up later on in the program and tell us about her experience with the program. And also Dr. John Barnard, he's a president of the Nationwide Children's Research Institute, and he'll tell us about how Nationwide has benefited from it. And coming up next, Bob Clegg, Republican strategist, and Scott Varner, he's communications director for the Ohio Department of Transportation. We'll find out what the Strickland administration thinks about this and also what Bob Clegg thinks about it. 614-292-8513 if you want to call. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
You're listening to WOSU 820 NPR News. Developed by WOSU Public Media and the Columbus Metropolitan Library, ColumbusNeighborhoods.org features more than 30 neighborhoods in and around Columbus. It allows users to tell their own stories, post their own photos and video, and contribute to the collective story of the city. To be a part of this multimedia public engagement project, or to learn more, visit ColumbusNeighborhoods.org. 76 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:19 this morning. Cloudy skies today. Some sunshine will peek through those clouds, but you're going to want to keep the umbrella handy. There is a chance of rain showers and thunderstorms this afternoon and a high of 88 degrees. Clouds tonight with still a chance of showers and thunderstorms. A muggy night tonight, a low of 72. And keep that umbrella around for Wednesday. There will be sunshine, but still a chance of showers and thunderstorms tomorrow and a high of 90. All Sides continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the stimulus program that went into effect about a year ago. It's was supposed to kick off with shovel-ready projects a year ago, and a lot of those were coming from the Ohio Department of Transportation. So we invited Scott Varner. He is a communications director at the Ohio Department of Transportation to join us today. Scott, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
And also with us, Republican strategist Bob Clegg. We'll be talking to Bob in just a few minutes. Bob, thanks for being with us today.
No problem, man.
Scott, Matt Mayer of the Buckeye Institute says that the stimulus program has not done enough to stimulate the private sector.
Well, we're doing a great job creating more high-paid government jobs. But we're doing very little to effectively stop the bleeding with the private sector and in fact, get the jobs growing.
So, Scott, what do you say to that? How does that work with ODOT? How does ODOT perceive the creation of jobs through its projects?
Well, there are a couple of points I would make. You know, the Recovery Act has brought unprecedented levels of new federal transportation funding to Ohio, an historic $1.5 billion in new additional transportation funding, you know, including the $400 million to restore passenger rail service here in Columbus. But really, ODOT's story of this historic investment in infrastructure is really only a third of the stimulus story here in Ohio. You know, many people, the focus has often been on the creation of jobs, those investments in infrastructure and clean water grants. But really, that is only a third of it. About a third of the Recovery Act dollars provided tax relief to 90% of the country. The Making Work Pay Tax Credit is what it was called. Ohioans are receiving an $800 tax credit for joint filers, $400 tax credit for individual tax filers. For both, we had it in 2009 and for the 2010 tax year. The average family takes home about $65 more every month. The average individual takes home about $33 more each month. So a third of the Recovery Act provided tax relief. Another third provided direct benefits to those who were most likely to be hurt by the recession. That includes things like the extension of unemployment compensation, COBRA health insurance premium payments, a 13% increase in food stamp benefits, support for Medicare, immunizations, child care. So much of the Recovery Act is far beyond what ODOT has been able to do. And each of those points help build jobs. I think a great example that President Obama pointed out when he was here in town was the work being done there on Parsons and Livingston Avenue on the south side. $15 million project being paid for with stimulus funds. But it was more than just the new sidewalks and traffic signals, the bike ramps that are bicycle lanes and sidewalk ramps that we'll put in. It will help leverage the investments being made by Children's Hospital. 2,300 new jobs, a very powerful message about the South Side, where businesses can prosper, economic development being sparked today that will continue in the future. So the job creation is not just about what we do today, but really about the investments that will spur growth, create jobs and prosperity in the future.
Bob Clegg, President Obama says that economic development from the stimulus program is putting money over the longer term back into the neighborhood where he spoke yesterday or spoke last week. Let's hear from him now.
Economic development that's being sparked today is going to continue into the future. And my understanding is because the hospital is now growing, that means they're putting money back into the neighborhood for housing and other facilities so that the entire community starts rebuilding.
Bob Clegg, don't investments like this take time to take root?
Well, I mean, it takes time to take root, but if you're looking at what the purpose of the stimulus was, and that was to create jobs, and I would think those would be long-term jobs. The only way you can do long-term jobs is in the private sector, and that's not happening. The jobs that are being created are basically, you know, government jobs. And what's happening is we're saving these government jobs on a periodic basis. We get them 1 year at a time, okay? We're saving them now for a year, and then a year from now we're going to try to save them again, and then a year after that, again. I mean, we're not looking at any real long-term economic growth. And I think the clearest signal we saw this was in the unemployment numbers last month in May, when only 41,000 private sector jobs were created in the month of May. There were hundreds of thousands of government jobs, but those were all temporary census worker jobs. So I guess the best thing the president could do is probably make the census a yearly thing, where he would need those workers every year then, because that way we would have permanent jobs, because there are no real permanent jobs being created from the stimulus.
You know, Governor Strickland said last week that until the flow of capital picks up for the private sector, government should step in. So let's hear that.
Until the private sector is willing to take greater risks, make more investments, until credit becomes more available for private sector investment and expansion, I think it is critical that these public resources be expended.
So, Bob, how does something, for instance, like the stimulus program operate differently the way that Governor Strickland is putting it, operate different than something, say, like the Third Frontier program?
Well, I mean, the stimulus is providing dollars for stopgaps. Obviously, I mean, that's what the governor is saying, I guess, that until the private sector kicks it in gear, we got to rely on the government to just keep spending money to just keep things going. Now, the problem with that is there's no end in sight. That's just more and more money being spent that we don't have, which makes the deficits grow that much bigger. And I guess we're not supposed to worry about that except when the effects of having all these deficits finally hit us. Now, how it's different than Third Frontier is that Third Frontier is a bonded program that is creating jobs in the private sector that are going to be long-term jobs, which, of course, means the government in the end makes money off of that because these long-term jobs create taxes that go to government. And that's the difference. Instead of having these government jobs that have to keep being bailed out on a periodic basis with government money. I mean, that's the other thing. We're plowing government money to save government jobs that creates more government spending because those benefits have to be paid and the salaries have to be paid. And it's like a never-ending cycle where the Third Frontier is creating actual private sector jobs.
You know, the president said that nearly 2,400 small businesses have received loans to keep their doors open. So what's wrong with a loan program that the government isn't giving the money away, it's just loaning it?
Yeah, that's, I mean, loaning's fine, but I mean, unfortunately, that's not the bulk of what's happening. What's happening here is and the government, and the president just has come back to ask for what? $150 billion more dollars to save teacher jobs, police jobs, fire jobs. I mean, the president was just here a year ago to save police jobs, okay? So now we're back saving more police jobs. And as you know, with police and fire, those are jobs that are always thrown out there as we have to fund these. These are, your safety is at risk. And it's almost a blackmail system here. You got to do this. And the other thing is, I mean, obviously this is helpful to the public employee unions who are big backers of the president and the Democrats. And the more that the government can do to keep these government employees employed, the better off, you know, the public unions are, public employee unions.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the federal stimulus program. You just heard Bob Clegg, he's a Republican strategist, talking about whether or not it works, thinks it's not going to work. And also Scott Varner, he's with us, communications director of the Ohio Department of Transportation, and Doug Caruso, Columbus Dispatch reporter that has been covering the issue. Scott, what about those criticisms? These are just one-time job. These are maybe for a year or two at a time. For instance, is the Nelsonville bypass just a – how do you fund a project like that that's supposed to be multi-year with stimulus funds?
Well, I think the important thing to think about when you talk about transportation investments in particular really is the return on investment that these dollars today provide. The Nelsonville bypass is a great example. When that project is done, we have opened up an incredible corridor for shipping and logistics for businesses to get their goods to market much faster and more efficiently, for people to drive safer. Those are tremendous investments today that allow for us to have a greater return in the future. You know, we can look at, you know, just last month alone, the dollars that the paychecks that went to men and women on stimulus-backed transportation projects. Construction workers earned more than $8.5 million last month alone on stimulus-funded projects. Those in dollars that they have today, that allows them to go grocery shopping, to make an investment in purchasing a new car, helping those other industries. But really, you know, I think the greatest return on our investment in transportation stimulus will be those improved systems of the future, such as, you know, we can talk about passenger rail being one of the great returns, this job generator that could come to Ohio or will come to Ohio when we make those investments of stimulus funds, we hope.
Bob Clegg, what about that investment in the infrastructure of Ohio, including, for instance, things like that building the broadband internet access in those five rural Ohio counties?
Yeah, there are some of the programs that I think are good. As Scott just talked about the Nelsonville bypass, but in the broadband, that I think in the end will help with economic development in the state. However, you, on the same hand, or even with more money, you want to look at, like, this passenger rail thing. I mean, hundreds of millions of dollars is going to be spent on that, where it will not make enough money to sustain itself. So what ends up happening is we're going to spend a lot of money to build this rail system that then the state of Ohio is going to have to supplement, subsidize with state dollars every single year. Now, we're going to be facing a year from now $6 billion deficit in the state of Ohio. How in the world are we going to spend hundreds of millions of federal dollars so that we can then spend tens of thousands of state dollars every year to keep it going? And what happens is we create these jobs, like these rail jobs, and then we can't let them go. So therefore, we have to do a subsidy every year or we're going to lose these jobs. So where do we make money on this as taxpayers? Where do we make money? We don't. It's just more and more reasons for the government, either on a federal or state level, to spend more and more taxpayer dollars.
614-292-8513, if you want to join the conversation. Peter, you're on the air. You are questioning whether there was a jobs program in place when things started to go wrong.
Yeah, the Republicans under President Bush had 8 years to get jobs here in Ohio. They lost 300,000 of the 400,000 jobs that had been lost here in Ohio. What did they do? They did nothing. They came here and scared everyone to vote for them because they said they'd make the country secure, which they did, but they did nothing about the jobs. They let the corporations ship the jobs overseas. Mr. Clegg, answer me that, and I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Peter. Bob, you know, that's always going to be a debate after one administration leaves. How much were they responsible for what the next administration is left with?
Yeah. And I mean, sure, the recession started under the Bush administration. I think there's no question about that. And it has continued unabated in the Obama administration. Over the 8 years that President Bush was president, I think the unemployment rate here in Ohio was at a pretty low level. Historically, it started going up when he was leaving. I mean, that's part of economic cycles. But I think as a president, he did a good job at keeping unemployment overall. And he had his own recession he had to deal with himself totally because of 9/11. And we weathered that. And, I mean, he kept the national unemployment rate at historic low levels, lower than his overall unemployment level was lower than the 8 years that Bill Clinton was president. So we had a lot of economic growth that occurred. As he was leaving office, we were going into a recession. That's economic cycle.
Scott Varner, how do you measure, how's the state going to measure the impact of this kind of development? You've already said it's not necessarily just in terms of jobs directly created by it, but how are you going to measure the success in the long run?
Well, I think we can do two things. One, in the very short term, as Doug mentioned earlier, there is the reporting that goes on every month that we know on transportation construction projects funded by the stimulus, how many people in Ohio are earning paychecks.
But he also mentioned that there's a lot of different ways to interpret that data.
Well, it's very clear how many, you know, we get a very specific number, how many people on a work site received a paycheck and how much did they earn, how many hours did they work. So we get very specific numbers on the specific transportation projects. That's a great way for us to measure today those things that the stimulus funds are doing. But to the more long term, I mean, there no way will we be able to ever count the additional jobs that were brought on at a restaurant or at a dry cleaner where those transportation workers who had new dollars were able to invest and keep businesses open and thriving. But we will hopefully see it, you know, in the turnaround that we've started to see with, you know, new jobs being added for 3 months in a row now in Ohio, 4 out of the past 5 months, gains in manufacturing, 5,900 new jobs in industries such as, you know, car and major appliances, those manufacturing jobs.
We have an email from a listener who writes, more than one economist has said that job creation has been stagnant since 2001. Corporate breaks and tax cuts have been proven unsuccessful. Could Mr. Clegg please explain why even temporary job creation is worse than his party's empty promises? Why doesn't he insist that banks stop hoarding their cash and make loans to small businesses so jobs can, in fact, be created? So let's go to the point. Why is even temporary job creation worse than nothing, Bob?
Well, it's not worse than nothing if we're just going to do a one-time temporary job and that's it. We're not going to be spending any more dollars on it. But we keep expending more and more money to create these temporary jobs, and then they don't become temporary. We have to then make them permanent. We have to have these jobs, and therefore more and more taxpayer dollars is being spent on it. I question whether we haven't had any job growth in this country since 2001, when the unemployment rate was at 5% for most of that time period. What were people doing, just staying at home doing nothing?
Well, they didn't say no growth. They said stagnant.
Well, I'd much rather be stagnant at 5% unemployment than what we're at right now, where we're stagnant at almost double digit, or here in Ohio, over double digit for the last year. So I question his basis of his question. But, temporary jobs are fine if they are truly temporary and that's it. But what we're seeing is, We're seeing once again that they're using the stimulus dollars not for just temporary jobs, but for teachers and for police and for fire and all of that. And I mean, unless they're considering those as temporary jobs, and like I said, we're gonna, a year from now, we're facing a $6 billion deficit. And you want to make a bet that whoever's governor is going to say we cannot lay off hundreds of thousands of state workers, you know, and therefore where's the money going to come?
Yeah, and of course, that's an estimated $6 billion. It could be much higher.
Oh, it could be much, much higher. Mm-hmm. And I just worry about that because I worry, what are we going to do? How are we going to deal with that? And all these, and then we're going to add more like railroad jobs that we're going to have to add on top of that, because if we build the railroad, the passenger rail service.
You know, Bob, you talk about how the state has to maintain those railroads, but, you know, the state has to maintain the Nelsonville bypass, too. That's going to be much more expensive.
I'm talking about direct subsidies. I mean, I'm talking about direct subsidies so that they can keep running the trains on the tracks. I'm not talking about maintaining the tracks. I'm talking about money that they're going to need to keep the workers and, you know, keep buying supplies and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, that's why, you know, if we're gonna have, you know, subsidized government jobs, then, you know, it doesn't end, Anne. That's the problem. These expenditures on these jobs never end.
Scott Verner, before we take a break, just want to give you a last word. I, as far as this idea of permanent versus temporary, what about that sense of entitlement that once these jobs are saved once, we have to you're honor bound to save them forever.
You know, and I didn't want to make this conversation more about the passenger rail effort.
Well, I did. You brought it up, though. I didn't.
No. Oh, but more so, you know, again, when we look at transportation investments, no matter the mode, there is always that need for continual investment, whether it be the Nelsonville bypass or the passenger rail effort. The jobs that we are creating today does leave behind that transportation facility, whether it be a new road, a new bridge, a new passenger rail service, that will help spark private investment in the future. Children's Hospital is the great example of that. We've had other examples across the state, up in the Youngstown area, of a steel manufacturer who decided to, because of, in part, the stimulus efforts, because of the workers that were there, decided to stay in Northeast Ohio and invest more money to grow their private sector steel mill. So these jobs are not just about today, but really about what we can build upon for the future.
All righty. Scott Verner, Communications Director for the Ohio Department of Transportation, and Bob Clegg, Republican strategist. Thanks, both of you. Thanks to both of you for joining the show today. I appreciate it. And it's time for a short break on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
A Pentagon memo said Afghanistan could become the Saudi Arabia of lithium. Last March, Lawrence Wright wrote an article in The New Yorker asking if Bolivia could become the Saudi Arabia of the electric car. On the next Fresh Air, Wright applies what he learned to Afghanistan. And Wright talks about Israel's easing of the Gaza blockade. He spent 3 weeks in Gaza late last year. Join us.
Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. WOSU Public Media and the Columbus Metropolitan Club present Wednesday's Forum. Tomorrow at noon, as a part of the Growing Regional, Growing Smart series, a discussion of Portland, Oregon, Regionalism Realized. Tickets and more information available at columbusmetroclub.org.
Support for the Statehouse News Bureau stories heard on WOSU comes from the law firm of Porter, Wright, Morris & Arthur, LLP, helping businesses and individuals solve complex legal problems throughout Ohio, across the country, and around the world. On the web at porterwright.com.
76 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:41 this morning. Cloudy skies today and a chance of showers and thunderstorms, a high of 88 degrees. Clouds tonight and a chance of rain tonight as well, a muggy night with a low of 72. Sunshine for Wednesday, but still a chance of rain and a high of 90. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining me this hour, Charissa Durst, she's a owner of Hardlines Design Company. It's one of the companies in Central Ohio that has benefited from the stimulus program. Charissa, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
Tell me, yours is a design and architecture company. How did it? Tell me about the relationship between your company and the stimulus program.
Well, we had submitted a proposal for a Corps of Engineers New England district contract for 5 years. And I think the timing just worked out that at the time they were going to make an award to us for that contract, the stimulus funding hit. So the first task order they gave us on the contract was funded by stimulus money. The only kind of odd thing that happened was that because it was stimulus money, it had to be spent within a year. So I think we got almost $2 million for our first task order, but instead of being spread over, say, 4 years, we had to do it all in 1 year. So kind
of, was that practical?
It kind of ended up like a construction project. Instead of sustaining our firm for 5 years, where we may have actually been able to hire a couple of people full-time, we basically had to hire a bunch of people temporarily in order to get the field work done and to sort of rush it through. And we also had to work with another firm because there was just no way, as a small business, we could have done that much work in those short months.
So is that a way that you would normally – obviously, you said it's not normally how you'd run your business.
No, and the way this contract was set up, it was set up for $500,000 per year for 5 years. And so if they had funded it that way, yes, it would have sustained us for 5 years. And right now, instead, we ran through that money in a year trying to get all this work done in the short amount of time.
And have you had to lay people off now?
No, actually, it kept what we had busy. It's just fine. We'd always just said – had it been able to be spread out over the 4 or 5 years, yes, it would have kept all of us secure for those 4 or 5 years and maybe even enabled us to hire a few more people.
Also joining us now is Dr. John Barnard, president of the Research Institute at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Welcome to the show, doctor.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Tell us about Nationwide's Children's Hospital's relationship with the stimulus program.
Well, the stimulus program was a very good to us at the Research Institute at Nationwide Children's. In aggregate, we received $19.7 million from the stimulus program to develop new research programs and to build upon existing research programs. So it was very good for us and very good to us. We competed very, very aggressively. Scientists all over the United States really aggressively applied for these funds, but we were able to compete effectively and win quite a lot of grants.
Now, Charissa said that they had to spend all of their money within a year. Is that the case with the sort of aid that you received?
It varies. Some of our grants were one-year grants. Some of them were two-year grants. A few were longer than that. But some also, we received a $500,000 grant from the National Institutes of Health to purchase an equipment item, and that was part of the stimulus program. And you might ask, well, how does that create jobs?
Mm-hmm.
It actually created a lot of jobs. We had to hire two people to help run this very sophisticated piece of equipment, and it clearly stimulated the economy in terms of the company selling the equipment and all of the parts that go into the equipment. So obviously that's a one-time purchase, but it definitely helps stimulate the economy.
How many jobs do you count as being created via your
I don't have an aggregate number, but I can give you a ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
So one of our grants is actually a very large grant, created a new resource for the Human Cancer Genome Atlas Project, and it is a longer-term government commitment that was jump-started by stimulus funding, and it is expected to create between 50 and 60 jobs by itself. And additionally, you know, there are a number of other grants that contributed to job creation. So I think it was really quite successful overall.
So, Doug Caruso from the Columbus Dispatch, grants like these and contracts such as the type that Hardlines Design Company participated in, they operate real very differently.
To some extent, actually, the contracts and the research grants don't operate that much differently. The government is paying, paying a certain amount of money to get a job done. If your research proposal gets funded, and you maybe are able to hire some lab assistants and do that research over the next 2 years. In the case of Hardlines Designs, the government was actively seeking something to be done. In their case, I think it was archaeological surveys for the U.S. Corps of Engineers, and this was a bid contract. They were bidding on it and won the contract. So when you're going for research funding, you are you're making a research proposal, and it's judged, and you either get it or you don't. If you are bidding on a contract, you make your best bid and see if you can get the job. You get it or you don't. These are actually pretty. They're different outcomes and different systems, but they're kind of parallel.
But it's curious that in the case of what Charissa Durst was just saying, that normally how she'd normally run her company would be to bid it out over a five, and get a contract for over a 5-year period. What was the logic in limiting these kinds of contracts to just 1 year?
I think what was happening was the way the stimulus bill was written, and in fact this affects both research and the contracts, that the money was supposed to go into the economy as quickly as possible. And so what they did was say, for all these contracts, it needs to be a 2-year contract, a 1-year contract. It needs to be a 1-year research project, 2-year research project. And it needs to be ready to go right now. From my understanding, the project in Massachusetts, or was it Massachusetts?
Massachusetts and Connecticut.
That was already planned by the Corps, and it was planned as a 5-year project. And when the stimulus money became available, they said, wait a minute, if we make it a 2-year project, we can fund it right now. Is that kind of how it worked?
I think that's how it worked. That
because
was pretty
it's
much,
coming through the
budget. Right. It was their budget for the next 5 years to do this work, but they ended up doing it in 1 year.
Dr. Barnard, what are these research projects? Is this work stuff that wouldn't have been done without the stimulus program?
I think that very little of it would have been done without the stimulus program, or it may have come later. It allowed our scientists to fast pace some of their work, but much of it is new science and that holds the potential for new discovery.
And they can go over the course of a couple years. Does research work like that? Do you book it for a couple years and you? Or can it go? Can it sometimes take a lot longer than you expect?
Oh sure, there are always unanticipated barriers and challenges and unexpected findings, which can be exciting or very are very deflating. But one of the other interesting aspects about, I'm just looking now on my mm-hmm. computer screen at a list of the grants that we did receive, and this stimulus program will stimulate research collaborations for years to come. So I'm seeing that we partnered with Northwestern University, University of Michigan, University of Pennsylvania, Vanderbilt University, Baylor Research Institute, and I could go on and on. So one of the cool things about the stimulus program, as far as I'm concerned, is it created opportunities for interactions between healthcare centers across the United States in a way that maybe we haven't done so well previously.
How so? How did it establish those relationships? Was that a part of a requirement?
For some of the requests for applications, that was a requirement.
Was that part of the mission, Doug? Is that a sense, that, Dr. Barnard, that you get that was part of the mission, is to connect these universities? And
well, it is the way science is going anyway. Mm-hmm. So, again, I think it was just a matter of fast pacing it. Science is becoming a very multidisciplinary, cross-institutional way of doing business, and I think the stimulus program just helped stimulate and catalyze what was going to happen anyway.
Did the way the program is the way that it operates, does it make sense? Does it work well?
Well, there are some limitations on what one can really do, and it was alluded to before. This happened very quickly,
mm-hmm.
and so the National Institutes of Health had to review thousands and thousands of protocols and research proposals from across the United States, and the infrastructure to do that simply did not exist. So there were a lot of volunteer efforts nationally, and I know that our colleagues at the National Institutes of Health worked crazy hours and weekends and vacations and everything to help process all of these proposal. So it's not a good long-term model to advance research, but under the circumstances, I think they actually did a admirable job.
What do you think, Teresa, as far as how your company operates?
It definitely helped our company. Usually when we work with clients like this, they have a backlog of work that they need to get done, and they request that money and maybe they get a part of it. So I think in this case, it really helped the New England district get through all of their work very quickly. The advantage may be that, if they wanted to build a new recreation area in a specific area, they now can do it at any time because we've basically cleared that land for them now rather than later.
We have a note from Amy on Facebook. It's good news that there were enough qualified people to do the specific temp work. Those workers are at least able to put that work on their resumes, and the employer gets a taste of how they could expand to do more business. I thought of that at least to give somebody else, some people that do get the job, something to put on their resume along the line. Doug Crusoe, is that part of this? Just kind of keep people floating out there and keep them off unemployment for one thing. And
sure. There are so many different programs, but there's a program that funds youth summer jobs and did pretty significantly last summer. I think they ran through most of the money and had to go looking for other sources this summer. But you had thousands of kids who were placed in jobs around the city with private companies, state agencies, what have you, part-time summer jobs. But they were getting paid, they were getting experience. They had something they could put on their resume. They were getting they were starting to understand how to work. This is at the these are young people, 14 to, I think it went all the way up to 24, but home from college or off from school. And as one person put it, there's no faster way to put money in the economy than to hand it to teenagers. But that there definitely a goal of that program was to give them some experience in the workforce and give them a chance to see what it's like to work. They, you know, obviously they're going to go back to school or they're gonna, that job is going to end. And these are some of the very most temporary stimulus jobs out there. But that was one of the goals.
Now, that did feel sort of an entitlement-ish because they came back this year. They didn't have the same pot of money to pull from. They ended up going to TANF money, the temporary aid to needy families.
That's right. Tell
me the difference between the two programs now.
My understanding of the difference is that the TANF money has a lot more restrictions on it. There are tighter income restrictions, tighter restrictions on, you know, who can get it and what they can use it for. So they would prefer to the stimulus money in this case was actually a little bit more wide open. They could serve a lot more different kids with it. So the pool of people who will be able to get the TANF money might be a little smaller this year.
Dr. Barnard, were there restrictions on it that were a problem to deal with when it came to using this money?
No, I think that you know, the part of the restrictions were the work had to be doable in 1 to 2 years, and scientists normally don't think that way. So we had to reframe our way of writing these grants that allowed for the work to be done in a year or two. And then there are very tight reporting, quarterly reporting requirements, which we normally don't do. So we report to the government via a web-based system, the progress that we've made and jobs that have been created and what the work output is. So there's a level of accountability, which or diligence around accountability that we don't normally have, at least at this level of intensity. So that was sort of an interesting dimension to this.
They're trying to get the program renewed at some level. Is there more that Children's Research Institute could benefit or could use?
You bet. Research is not a profit center for any academic health center and not a profit center for Children's Hospital. And so funds are always less than what we know that they could be and wish that they could be. So absolutely, there's more that can be done, and we touched it in this conversation earlier. But you know what happens when the year of funding is over? Do we lose a job? What happens after 2 years of funding? Do we lose a job? So there's a lot of anxiety in the healthcare world and in the research world. What happens after the stimulus program is over? Do we fall off a cliff and start back at square one, or in the meantime, has the NIH budget, which has decreased in real dollars annually since 2004, does it recover in such a way that we can sustain some of these programs that have been built by stimulus funding?
Okay, well, we're out of time, and that's a great question to end on. Thank you, Dr. Barnard, Dr. John Barnard, President, Children's Research Institute at Nationwide Children's Hospital. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
Also, Doug Caruso, Columbus Dispatch reporter, covering this issue since the beginning. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Ann.
And Charissa Durst, owner of Hardlines Design Company. Thank you for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
That's all the time we have today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.
Support for WOSU comes from Palmer Miller Nelson Insurance Agency Incorporated, serving Central Ohio homeowners and businesses for 155 years. 261-6300 or online at pmnins.com.